My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Grant and Danny on the Fan, sponsored as always by the law firm Cundori & Murat. They'll guide you and your family in the right direction, helping you to draft a will, set up a trust, or create a power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them that Grant and Danny sent you. They will score yourself a discount, kmlawyers.com. They sponsor this show. They're taking us with them to Cincinnati.
We're going
the show
to Cincy.
Is on the road. We're on to Cincinnati. A guy that used to coach in Cincinnati is Jay Gruden, the one-time play caller of the Bengals. Jay, you got to hook us with some recommendations, some suggestions. We need all of your favorite watering holes. We're going to be there for a couple of days for Monday Night Football next week.
Cincinnati, you cannot go wrong with any of the Ruby Steakhouse. There's a precinct down there. The Ruby Steakhouse is downtown. There's about 3 of them in Cincinnati, all of them top-notch. Montgomery Inn's a good place if you want some ribs. And there's a little tavern, the Montgomery Town Tavern, right next to the Montgomery Inn, right there. But there's a lot of new stuff in Cincinnati that's been built downtown. I wasn't there. They were just now getting underway when I left. And it's quite different now than when I was there. So I think you can just stay downtown and have a good old time.
I love it. On air and on the road, Jay Gruden is driven by the Tempered Automotive Group, Tempered Ford and Chantilly in Fairfax, your F-150 headquarters, Tempered Chantilly Lincoln, and Tempered Chevrolet in Sterling, home of Tempered for Life, lifetime vehicle coverage. See and shop them all at Tempered.com.
I guess this was probably after you left, Jay, but do you know about the famous hippopotamus there, Fiona?
I do not know about the famous hippopotamus there named Fiona.
Fiona the hippo is my favorite. So she was born at like 18 pounds. And hippos are normally born at like 400 pounds. And then she was nursed to health by all of these people that work at the Cincinnati Zoo. And my wife was obsessed with her and has a bunch of T-shirts and stuff and went and visited her. But basically, Fiona survived and is now a flourishing, excellent, lovely hippo with a family and everything.
Wow, what a story.
I'm with you, Jay. I never got it. I still don't get it. And I'm amazed that anybody spent a microsecond.
Fiona the hippo,
I'm sure,
man.
I'm sure there's a baby pigeon out there somewhere that was nursed to health, too, if you want to go visit her. Or
Dale the pigeon.
Bet you if I find it and I have the city, my wife will go see the pigeon. You just let me know.
Yeah, that's something you guys can do on your own. Have fun.
I love it. Jay, what'd you make of Jaden Daniels yesterday? Let's start there.
He's solid. You know, it's second game and did not turn the ball over, which is critical. In these close games, when your defense is playing pretty good and the other team's been struggling, you got to win these close games, and that's what happened. And turnovers will kill you. Look at Will Levis. You know, one bad turnover, and they lose the game. They had the game in hand against the Jets, but cost them the game. So as long as he's protecting the ball, I know everybody wants to see touchdowns in the red zone. They'll come, but just make sure we at least get points, keep the game close, and try to win at the end like they did.
What changed in the second half? Because that was the best he's looked by far in terms of being willing to stay in the pocket and make throws. I thought he was excellent in the second half of the game. He ended up throwing for almost 140 yards in the final couple of quarters.
Yeah, you know, it was great to see Brown make a big play. Stepped in throws. That 34-yarder to Brown was quite a throw. You know, they brought a fire zone. Eckler stepped up and made a great block. And he just set his feet and let it rip, you know, and that's something that you'll see more and more of. The more he can see some things and feel like there's no pass rush around him, he has clean pockets. You know, he needs to have some clean pockets from last night or yesterday. He had a little bit more in the second half. I think the Giant defense was a little gassed because they're out there quite a bit, and the ball's getting run down their throat a little bit, and couldn't get to the passer, so it gave him some time.
Jay, you mentioned the red zone woes. I'll take, you know, well over 400 yards of offense, scoring on every drive that they actually, you know, kneeled down at the end of the first half division, and those kind of opportunities. I'll take my chances every time, but they did stall out in the red zone. What did you see once they got down there that prevented the touchdowns?
Well, there's a couple things, a couple penalties, a couple sacks. You know, they tried to get some guys open, and he missed a throw over the top of the defense on one of them. He threw it out of the back of the end zone. There's a couple plays that they ran an RPO that just didn't work at all. They tried to run the ball on third and short one time, didn't get it to Eckler. Just a lot of things. But, you know, the good thing is they ate up a ton of clock. You know, that first drive was 10 minutes. You know, and the Giants are the best thing for a struggling defense like Washington has is have 10-minute drives all the time, and that's what Washington did. Unfortunately, they didn't convert, but there's a lot of reasons. You know, they'll get better with time, but I think overall he played pretty good.
Their running game was great yesterday, and I have a hard time thinking Daniels isn't kind of the reason why they're running it so well. It goes back to, you know, when I was covering the Kyle offense here in 2012 with Robert and Alfred Morris, who you would inherit. You know, he went for 1,600, but you got to defend 11 on 11. And Jaden's now shown the ability to keep it and be so dangerous. So B-Rob rips off 230-plusers. He's never done that once in his career. He went for 130. Eckler went for 40. I mean, they ran for 215 as a team. It seems like they got something brewing here.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can see one of the times it was a true handoff, and Jaden just took two steps after he handed off, and there's two guys trying to make sure he didn't have the ball. And then there goes the inside zone popping out of there. So, yeah, that is a hell of a weapon to have, Jaden Daniels. The threat of a zone read or him carrying the ball, getting outside the numbers, is scary on defenses, and you have to have people account for him. And that'll open up things for Eckler and Robinson like it did.
So speaking of that running game, in week one, obviously Daniels scrambling was so instrumental for their offense, doing anything mostly through three quarters. Running backs didn't really get going as much. This week, you know, 170 yards, give or take, between the two backs. What's sustainable from this week, Jay, going forward in terms of the running back portion of the running game?
Yeah, I think it's all going to depend on whether or not Washington manufactures some big plays in the passing game and force some two high safeties, because they're going to see a lot of single high safety the more teams prepare for them, and they're going to force them to try to throw the ball. So Terry's got to make some big plays, Noah Brown like he did last week, or somebody else in the passing game to scare defenses where they have to keep, you know, a safety over the top of Terry or what have you. But the more they play, the more they're going to see loaded boxes. It's going to be a little bit more difficult, but the threat of Jaden running, like I said, is still going to open up some holes for B-Rob and Eckler.
I was talking to someone earlier today who just watched the game back, and they talked about how hard it can be on some of the RPO decisions, where if you pull it and the guy's not immediately open or the pass isn't there, it's almost like a lock for a sack. And that happened a couple of times. He got sacked four times in the first half and five times if you count the one in the second half total. But can you expound upon that for people? Like, you know, a couple of those sacks that where he goes forward, loses one or two or whatever, you know, not the end of the world, but those are like RPOs that go bad, basically.
Yeah, a couple of them didn't work. You know, he pulled one of them out and tried to hit the swing to the back. It was covered. And, you know, the thing about RPOs, the linemen don't know if he's keeping it or handing it off. So they got an illegal man downfield one time, so they're blocking downfield. If you're going to throw the RPO, it's got to come out fast right now to a quick slant by a receiver, a hitch out there, or a screen, which they've had a little bit of success with. But if you have to hold the ball at all, the protection is so bad, he's going to get killed. So that happened a couple times. He had to scramble around and took a couple sacks. But that's just something they got to continue to work on. RPOs, I think, you know, they'll probably dwindle a little bit. But I do like the zone read part of it and some of the bootlegs off of some of these things. But the RPOs, they just got to get on the same page. And Jaden's got to realize that, hey, if I hold this ball longer than about a second, I'm either going to get killed or we're going to have a legal man downfield.
Jay Grid with us here on Grant and Danny. So, Jay, and passing numbers are down sort of across the league. I think almost half of the guys that threw yesterday didn't have 200 yards. I mean, it's just a different time, it seems, through a couple of weeks. So this is, you know, all kind of with a grain of salt. But where are their chunk plays going to come from? Forget about the home runs or 97 yards to Justin Jefferson or, you know, whenever the Saints play, I guess. But those like 12 to 20 yard kind of strike plays that sort of change field position or, you know, kind of bail you out and kind of make things easy. Where are those going to come from week in and week out, do you think?
Yeah, I think if they, you know, limit some of the RPO stuff and go into more play action passes where they're holding it in there and pulling it out and then trying to hit the quick slant over the middle, the glance route over the middle, or with a deep comeback or what have you, where it's more of a true pass protection, not just guys blocking the run, I think they'll be able to hit some, especially if they're having success running the ball. This is a great testament for these guys moving forward to run the ball like they did against the Giants, whose front is pretty damn good. You know, I didn't think they'd have much success with the front that the Giants had, but that'll scare the hell out of some people. That'll make linebackers bite on some of these actions, and then you can get people sneaking over the back of their, over the top of them, and have some big plays that way. Some three-level throws, quick throws, like I mentioned. I think they'll come in bunches here in the future.
So is that harder to do, some of that play-action stuff you're talking about, if you're in shotgun almost exclusively?
No. There's a lot of teams that do the play-actions out of shotgun, and they're quite effective, actually. You just got to hold it in there and sell it. Like I said, you can still sneak some guys around there behind the defense, behind the second level of the defense.
Jay Gruden on Grant and Danny every Monday at 5 o'clock. Great insight on Washington's game after he watches it back. And within the next few minutes, we'll start going around the NFL with him as well. You referred to Noah Brown earlier. He had 3 targets, 3 catches, 56 yards, made an immediate impact. Had the 34-yard catch to set up the game-winning field goal. On a similar concept, a drive earlier, he made a diving catch on a ball that was thrown on a dart, and he made a really athletic play. I loved how he separated at the top of his route for a big guy. He's already seemingly their second wide receiver, it feels like.
Yeah, it seems that way. I don't know, you know, where these other guys have been, but somebody has to step up. I mentioned it last week to take a little pressure off Terry and give him a legitimate target on the other side. You know, if they're going to keep Terry on one side, then that other side, they better have somebody out there that can get some separation or make some big plays. And Noah Brown looks like he's emerging as that guy. You know, they still have the other Brown, Dwame, he's got to make some plays, and obviously the rookie McCaffrey. But, you know, Noah looks pretty good. You know, he's a veteran guy. He went to Ohio State. He's a physical guy in the running game, so he'll help out blocking for McCaffrey and B-Rob as well. So it's a good guy to have out there.
Jay, you mentioned Terry McLaurin a couple times, and we're big fans of Terry McLaurin just in this city and on the show, and everybody likes the guy. He's a great dude. Do you think it might be time to have kind of a tough conversation about how good Terry McLaurin actually is? I'm not saying he's benchable or anything like that, but we've always thought of him as, hey, he's a number one. He's really good. Is he? I'm wondering through a couple of weeks. It's too early to slam the gavel, but what are you seeing from him in terms of getting open, getting off of a press, and is he towards that upper echelon of receiver still?
I think he is. Yeah, I just think opportunities haven't been there for him. And Jaden's got to gain trust in him like he had trust in Brian Thomas and Malik Nabers at LSU. He'd give him some opportunities in the deep passes, even if he looks like he's covered. You know, some of these big-time receivers that are getting all the money, you know, they're not always wide open, but the quarterbacks give him opportunities. And I think if he trusts Terry to make a play where it won't be intercepted, either it's going to be incomplete or a big play or a pass interference, and give him some of these opportunities, Terry will come through for him. You just got to gain the trust in him, and I'll take a little time.
Jay, I used to love how you used Chris Thompson. Thought he was perfect in your offense, and you did some good things with him. Austin Eckler, who's always had that kind of game, has been fantastic through a couple of weeks. Are you surprised with how spry he looks after the expectation, or at least the narrative around him this offseason was he was washed?
Yeah, no, I think they're using him perfectly with the amount of reps as well. He's not a guy you want to give the ball to 15, 20 times a game. He's in a role perfect, very similar to how we had for Chris. Chris usually carried the ball 6, 7 times a game, and we use him in the passing game. He's a great pass protector, and that was a great role for him. And Austin is thriving in this role, and he can stay fresh. It's a great change of pace from Brian Robinson. So that 1-2 punch is pretty dangerous for Washington moving forward, but I love how they're using him, and the amount of time and the amount of play snaps he's using is perfect.
Jay, I want to ask you about Washington's defense at this point. We thought they'd be better, not how much better. I mean, I think that was, well, we didn't know how much better, I guess, is the way to phrase it. We thought there'd be some improvement, and they're right at the bottom of the league again in pretty much every rankings through a couple of weeks. What do you see when you watch that group, and how would you attack them as an offensive play caller?
Right now, you can attack any way you want to, be honest with you. Singletary had almost 100 yards, and Daniel Jones, you know, was pretty comfortable in the pocket for the most part. If Malik Nabers doesn't drop that pass on the sidelines, probably going to be another touchdown drive for the Giants, whose offense struggled mightily last week. So they got to figure some things out when they start playing some good offenses. Cincinnati's going to, you know, give them a little bit of a problem if T. Higgins plays, because they'll be able to run the ball and throw the ball with some monster weapons on the outside. But, you know, the cornerback play, it's hard for them to stack the box because, you know, right now their corners aren't playing very good. So they're afraid to cover for very long. So they play coverage. They are not stopping the runs with light boxes. So they're right now in a conundrum of what to call. So they got to be very creative in their defenses. They're stunting their blitz packages because they cannot leave their corners on an island right now because they'll get gutted.
Jay Gruden on G&D. A primetime performance last night and a second straight clunker for Caleb Williams. First of all, what have you made of him through 2 weeks? That offense has looked pretty gross. And should we be feeling a lot better about Jaden Daniels, who's been very solid, based on how Caleb Williams looks, or small sample, not worth comparing the two just yet?
Yeah, I wouldn't compare them yet. You know, they're both 1-1. That's comparable, I guess, so that's very good. But Caleb is – they've really struggled protecting Caleb in known passing situations. Obviously, Keenan Allen didn't play last week, so that hurt him a little bit. Dunze is kind of banged up a little bit, but – you know, their offensive line struggled against the Texans. A lot of teams will. You know, Hunter on the outside and Anderson on the outside. Those two guys are pretty good pass rushers. And D'Amico Ryans does an excellent job of those blitz packages. And I don't know who could have played quarterback for the Bears last night, because he got pummeled. I mean, he got sacked 7 times, could have been 9 or 10 times. And if you can't protect the rookie quarterback with the running game or your pass protection, then no matter what the quarterback is, who he is, what he was drafted, where he was drafted, they're going to struggle. And the Bears right now got to figure out their pass protection woes and how to protect this kid, because he's not going to last.
Jay, just looking at the league at large, we referenced this earlier, but why do you think passing is sort of trending down in terms of some of the – I mean, I'm used to opening season, it's like 400 yards, 4 touchdowns, 7 different guys do it, ho-hum. It seems that yards and sort of some of the big plays, again, the Saints and maybe Minnesota this past weekend notwithstanding, seem to be harder to come by. What do you make of the kind of passing totals being watered down here?
I don't see a lot of guys open. You know, there's not a lot of good receiving cores. I mean, it seems like there are, but – I just don't see a lot of guys getting open, you know, and the pass protection hasn't been great either. The defensive coordinators do a great job with these line games and twists and blitzes and pick the tackles. I mean, Brian Flores ran a number on San Fran with somebody. I mean, he picked Trent Williams, and the guy, the defensive end, rushes inside and hits Purdy in the face. I mean, some of these stunts are very difficult, and unless you can run the ball and protect your quarterback with some play actions and get some big plays on first and second down, if you're going to be in known passing situations, you're going to struggle, you know, against the Browns. I mean, there's some talented players, quarterbacks, and offenses that are struggling because, you know, it's very hard to pass protect.
You mentioned Flores. The defense has been very good, but your former coordinator, Kevin O'Connell, has the Vikings at 2-0 and Sam Darnold looking a lot better at quarterback than we've seen him in this league. What do you think of their start?
It's awesome, and they're playing great complementary football. You know, and they're getting a couple big plays here and there. The 97-yarder to Justin Jefferson is a game-changer. And they're making teams move the ball 70, 80 yards on 12, 14 plays. And when they get third down, Flores has a unique pass rush package that he gets home. He's got a lot of guys that could do multiple things on defense, whether they're rushing or dropping. Very confusing. He disguises coverages extremely well and confuses quarterbacks. And they're going to be in a lot of games because they play good defense. And if Sam Darnold continues to protect the football and the running game is just good enough to put a little pressure on the defense, they'll be competitive in just about every game they play.
Jay, when we're watching some of these games, you know, we draw these conclusions week to week. Like Dallas looks great week one, gets shellacked in week number two, and it's, you know, so hard to predict. When you were coaching, right, as an OC and then as a head guy, when did you feel like you knew who you guys were? Like, how long did that process take for you internally, and then let alone like schlubs like me on the outside?
Yeah, that takes a little bit of time. You know, it's just hard. You know, the good teams that last throughout the season are the teams that stay healthy. You know, Kansas City, as good as they are, as good as Patrick Mahomes, they've been pretty lucky as far as their health is concerned. Their star players play every game, and that's important. They lost Pacheco yesterday, so we'll see how they do there. My man Samaje Perine is going to get a shot. But you got to stay healthy. That's number one. And your star players have to play like stars. If your star players are struggling, you're not going to have a very good year. So I based it on our star players, our quarterback, number one, our quarterback play, and then our pass rush, how good our line of scrimmage was. You know, I always believed in protecting the quarterback and getting after the other quarterback. If you could do that, you felt pretty good about your team. But if you struggled in one of those three areas, it's going to be a long year.
If one of these teams ends up being better than is expected, Which one would you pick? I'm going to give you the New Orleans Saints, who have scored on every single drive. Clint Kubiak's friggin' been money. Derek Carr's lighting it up. The L.A. Chargers under Jim Harbaugh, who are 2-0. Seems like everywhere he goes, he wins. And then the Steelers, who accidentally started Justin Fields and have begun their season 2-0, plus 15 in margin. Which of those three do you think has the best chance to be really good?
I think based on schedule, I'd probably say the Saints. You know, I think the Buccaneers are still going to win that division, but playing the Panthers and Falcons twice. Yeah, we got to realize now that the Falcons, the Steelers played the Falcons, and who they just beat?
Denver.
The Broncos. They're not very good. You know, the Chargers beat the Raiders, and they beat Carolina. Those are two teams that are struggling a little bit. The Raiders got a huge win, don't get me wrong. But there's some really struggling football teams right now in the National Football League, about 8 to 10 of them. If you get those guys early on your schedule and get some wins against those teams, then you'll be, you know, in the hunt as the season goes on. But I just don't see anybody still competing with some of the upper echelon teams right now, the Kansas Cities, the Chargers, the Lions, you know, some of these teams. But, you know, every week is different. And of those three teams, like I said, I like the way the Saints are playing. They got a good defense a little bit. They got a good corner. I like them because they can line you up and base personnel. They did a lot of two tight end sets and two receiver sets and two receivers and a fullback and a tight end, and they force teams to play base defense. And nowadays, not a lot of teams have enough good linebackers to play base defense. It sounds silly, but a lot of teams are in nickel personnel 90% of the time. Now here come the Saints, and they just bludgeon you with this fullback and these tight ends, and they bring in Hill sometimes, take some Hill, and he does a good job. So, and then the play actions off of it are nasty. So I like the fact that they can play very physical football. Ruiz, the guard's playing good. The rookie tackle's playing outstanding, and they're protecting Derek. So they're going to be in a lot of games.
Philadelphia, Atlanta tonight. Who do you like and why?
Philadelphia, I think, kills them, to be honest with you. I just don't think Atlanta has enough weapons for Kirk right now. You know, outside of London and Bijan, they're going to struggle a little bit protecting Kirk, and he's not moving very well. So I think the pass rush for Philly will get home, and Philadelphia win pretty easy.
How do you get him moving, or what do you do? Maybe the better question is, let's say you're his head coach. You're drawing up a game plan tonight based on what we saw where he had to be in pistol or gun. And then even more discouraging may have been the video that came out from practice last week when he was dropping from under center and it looked really rough. Like, what would you design or what would your plan be for him?
Well, I've said this all along. If he's not 100% healthy and he can't do the play actions, I wouldn't play him. You know, his strength is first, second down play action passes underneath the center and holding that ball out and pulling it out and hitting those glance routes and those deep crossers. And that's what he's really, really good at. The bootlegs outside, hitting it down flat to the tight end, a low crosser coming around. He's really good at that. As far as just dropping back and throwing and being a sitting duck back there, I don't know if this is what they want because they don't have enough receivers. They got Drake London, they got little Gat Booty, and they got little Ray-Ray Robinson, Ray-Ray, whatever. They're little.
Ray-Ray McCloud.
Little Ray-Ray.
Ray-Ray McCloud. Yeah, they're little, and they're not going to get open for Kirk. He's got to wait, and Kirk has to see guys open to throw it. And these routes take some time to develop, and they're going to have to block Sweat and Josh Huff and Jalen Carter. It's going to be a long day for these guys, but the strength of Kirk's game is first, second down. They got to utilize Bijan Robinson. He's got to have a big day for them to have a chance. And then he'll do some perimeter screens and some screens of Bijan, but he's got to be successful on first and second down. Otherwise, they're in a world of crap.
Jay, awesome as always, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you, guys.
I think that's a professional term, world of crap.
That is an industry term, yes. On air and on the road, Jay Gruden is driven by the Ted Britt Automotive Group, Ted Britt Ford and Chantilly in Fairfax, your F-150 headquarters, Ted Britt Chantilly Lincoln, and Ted Britt Chevrolet in Sterling, home of Ted Britt for Life, lifetime vehicle coverage. See and shop them all at TedBritt.com.
Felt like Jaden Daniels took a big leap in the second half yesterday. Let's discuss that next on Grant and Danny.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
There in the Oculus, and then you go through the play.
Daniels will throw it back to Austin Eckler. He's got a lot of room. He's got a block. Eckler hit hard as he got around the 6-yard line by Phillips.
Fox on the call with Chris Myers in the booth yesterday. Welcome back to Grant and Danny on the Fan. Thanks to Toby for the update. All kinds of NFL news coming out this afternoon, including the Rams looking like they're going to put Cooper Kupp on injured reserve. He would join Puka Nacua on IR for the Rams. How about this? Cooper Kupp, Puka Nacua, injured reserve if he ends up there. Tyler Higbee, PUP. Joe Noteboom, IR. Connor McDermott, IR. Steve Avila, injured reserve. Jonah Jackson, injured reserve, possibly. Darius Williams, IR. Darian Kendrick, IR. John Johnson could be headed to IR. They are maybe done, and the season is just starting. They got demolished by the Cardinals yesterday.
It wasn't competitive. I mean, it really wasn't. Cardinals could have put up 60 points if they felt like it. It was
Sean McVay,
easy.
Yeah. Go win coach of the year. I mean, if they make the playoffs, it's yours.
So remember, they got off to a horrendous start last year, and everybody kind of wrote them off and said, you know, they're done. They're not the dynasty's over, or whatever. The bleep them draft picks window had closed, and ha ha ha, shame on them. And then they were unbelievable down the stretch. Their only loss was an overtime in Baltimore, one of the games of the year. And they were frisky. They were pretty good. So I didn't have a great feel for what would happen. I didn't know they'd lose half of their roster within the first 2 weeks of the season, including, you know, their two best pass catchers. But yeah, it is a bit of an adventure out there.
Their wide receivers this weekend will be Jordan Whittington and DeMarcus Robinson. Go get them, Matt Stafford. I mean, that is ugly early, just from a health standpoint for the LA Rams. How about this stat on Bryce Young, who was benched today by the Carolina Panthers. Dave Canales met with the media, said in that media session that he was sitting Bryce Young because it's what's best for the team. He also thinks long-term it's going to be what's best for Young. They're going to reset the young quarterback who has really struggled since last year. Everyone beat up on Zach Wilson, thought he was the worst quarterback in the history of the world. His net dropback per ETA through his first 18 games, if you add up all of the bad for Zach Wilson, was minus 101.8 after 18 career games. You tracking this?
I think so, yeah.
Minus 101.8. Same sample size for Bryce Young. Minus 162.5.
Good Lord.
In expected points added.
I mean, this is my all-time I was wrong. I mean, now, you know, who knows? Maybe the turnaround happens. Doesn't look likely now. Now that he's been benched for Andy Dalton and we're doing the gives us the best chance to win nonsense in Carolina.
He was so accurate
but gosh.
And decisive and anticipatory with his throws in college. I mean, I don't remember anybody that didn't think he'd be good. Now, everybody thought his size could be a problem, but that's different than him being terrible at quarterback. And it's very different than this guy will be better than C.J. Stroud, which was the prevailing thought everywhere.
Yeah.
The question was, would Stroud go two or would he fall way down the board? Would Will Levis go in the top five or would he end up sliding, which he did? There was really never any question about who was going to go 1-1 in the months leading up to the draft for the Carolina Panthers, but everybody was wrong on Bryce Young.
I mean, loud wrong, too. Watching that game where he went back and forth with Hendon Hooker in Tennessee. Remember that game, that Alabama-Tennessee game? Just the best college football theater over the last couple of years. The offensive performances were just stupid, right? As they were going back and forth, and you're going, this is poetry, watching this kid just glide out of trouble, you know, throwing back across his body, hitting guys in stride, as you said, anticipatory throws, everything that you could do to say, I'm ready for the next level, he was doing, and then some. He looked so incredible. That's as good as he looked then is as bad as he looked now. I mean, the lowlights write themselves, but you've all seen the montages where there's a guy open and he can't literally see over his center, so he tries to jump like he's like Anthony Hardaway coming down the lane looking for someone to pop open. It's embarrassing at this point.
Yeah, there's very little redeeming happening for that offense or for him. He was completing 55% of passes, no touchdowns, 3 interceptions. They had lost both games, not competitively. And in his career, in 18 starts, they're 2-16 as a team, but he's completed sub-60%, more interceptions than touchdowns, and that only begins to scratch the surface on how bad it's gotten. But I saw this from Jordan Schultz, who's plugged in with all the agents. He tweeted today, according to his sources, Panthers quarterback Bryce Young and those close to him were, quote, very shocked at the organization's decision to bench him this morning. It came out of nowhere, one source said. Safe to say no one anticipated the plug being pulled after just 2 games with a new coaching staff. Ask me. Call on me.
Grant.
I mean, you can't keep playing him, playing at that level. I'm all for giving guys a chance and continuing to play them. Sure, absolutely. But in his case, you lose a locker room if you keep playing a guy playing as badly as he was. When everybody's at practice and knows, Andy Dalton's at least going to find me when I'm wide open. Andy Dalton's at least going to get the ball out in a timely manner. Like, what was happening was unacceptable. He's struggling. He's got to figure it out. And then this is disqualifying, and he was playing at that level. Doesn't mean he'll always play at that level, but you unplug. This is the hard reset. You know, this is, you're talking to the IT guy, and they go, unplug, sit there for a couple of minutes.
Cut the hard line here.
And plug it back in. This is the football version of that. You're going to bench him for a month, and then you want to put him back in later in the year when the season's over and it's developmental time and see how much different he looks. Go for it. But this is the turn it off and turn it back on part.
Yeah, I am almost in every case, if you're going to be bad, you should be bad with developmental intentions, right? You should be purposefully bad. AKA, if you're not winning any games if you're Carolina, having Andy Dalton get you to 3-14 versus 2-15 doesn't help anybody. There's no benefit to that. It's a waste of time. 99.9% of the time, that's how I feel. In this case, you already said it. It's that bad that nothing can happen. Like, he's playing so poorly, It's only to give him a chance, because I don't know how much of a chance they have with anybody back there right now, as bad as that roster is and as bad as that organization is. And I feel for him because I have been there. I know what it's like. But it's a non-starter. Like, it's non-competitive. You know what I mean? It's like calling up a major league pitcher and going, this kid's got great stuff. And then it's not like, oh, he has control problems. He cannot throw a strike. He's Ann Keeling in a playoff game. And you're like, you can't just trot him out there every fifth day. We got to put him on the injured list. We got to send him down. You got to do something else because it's not competitive. And that's what it is right now.
We got Dan Quinn audio for you. Best of his press conference today coming up in 20 minutes at 6 o'clock here on G&D. What I want to get into, though, is a quarterback in town who does, as a young guy, look like you know what he's doing and does look better than Bryce Young has, and that's Jaden Daniels, who had some issues in the first half. Offensively, it was ugly. They had 5 false starts in the red zone, but two timeouts on the first drive call, just trying to get up to the line of scrimmage. But as the day went on, it seemed like Daniels really started to have things slow down around him, got comfortable, started operating their offense and throwing the football pretty consistently. It was the best we've seen him as a passer early on in his young career, 12 of 16 for 140 in the second half. How did you think Daniels played? You can hop in at 800-636-1067. We'll go through the good and the bad from his performance. There was a lot more good than bad in week number 2. Next on G&D. The Commanders are 1-1, and for the first time in his 2 games as quarterback, Jaden Daniels got to walk off the field a winner. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan, the first of hopefully many in what we're all hoping is going to be an illustrious career here in D.C. Danny, what'd you think of Daniels in game 2?
I was pretty impressed. Now, nothing world-beating here. We didn't see the second coming of anything. What we saw was a base being built of the safe, quick, short, easy stuff that I would major in, by the way, that I love, especially early on in games, because what you're doing, it's equivalent of a running game, which they had going as well, but it's those body punches, right? It's the little jab that keeps the defender at bay. And so eventually they get sick of it, and then stuff opens up. Then later on, after you soften the target a little bit, and they get tired of those little 5-yarders, 7-yarders, 8-yarders, 6-yarders, and you know, it's second and manageable a lot. You're standing on the field, which they did. You get sick of those, and then you can hit your deep stuff. Then you can hit your double moves. Then you can hit your kind of strike plays, that kind of intermediate stuff that became available ultimately in the second half. I saw a guy that, as the game progressed, seemed to become more comfortable. I don't think panic's the right word, so I don't have a better one than that, so I'm going with it, but just know that I wish there was a better word. I think in his first game, when everything's going so fast, there's a fight or flight type moment where you go, I could stick this out, and maybe I end up getting sacked.
And that's the phrase, by the way, that Kingsbury used.
Yeah.
Was flight or fight.
Right. And so he goes, you know what? I'm so athletic. I'm so good at this. I'll be our best offensive weapon. I'll run for 80 some yards on scrambles. So there's a happy medium there where a scramble can be very good, a very effective way to keep your team on the field. On a 3rd and 8, when everyone's got their back turned, somebody comes for pressure, you make a miss, everyone's got their head turned, you go get your first down.
So you were okay with how much they ran in this game?
So, yeah, to me, that's
we
closer.
We argued a lot about that all season.
That's closer to the happy medium. Like, to me, I want the occasional design run just to show it, to keep everybody honest, but I want them to major in those athletic playmaking plays where you turn a negative into an astounding positive, which I think is his specialty.
He ran 10 times statistically. It was actually probably more, but a couple of them were ruled sacks where he would, like, run out of bounds or whatever. So it was, you know, when you count last week.
One of his great escapes where he was in the grass, ended up being a sack because he ran out of bounds 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage. Instead of a 15-yard loss, it was 2.
Yeah, well, yeah. Minus 4 on the sideline. Wherever it was, yeah. No, it's true. It was also, well, you would say a great play. Throw the ball out of bounds and it's a 0. Mm-hmm. And you just go back to live the next play. So that's probably what they'll coach him up on. But I thought, so a few things. Number one, the second half to me, when I envision like what I hope this turns into is that. And to get a half like that this quickly is really a good sign, I'd say. I think that game 2 was better than game 1. I didn't have a big problem with game one in any way, but I think there was clear growth. And I think the second half was better than the first half. So this is all the way you want it to be. The first half, a lot of the procedural stuff, I don't know whose fault all that is. Calling two timeouts on your game opening drive, which, by the way, took almost 9 game minutes and took like what felt like 20 minutes of real lifetime with the timeouts and everything. It took forever, and that was great. I mean, the defense hadn't had to break a sweat yet in the heat, really, getting back on the field. But I think some of that needs to be cleaned up. That's on Daniels. That's on the whole outfit. I'm not saying all the false starts and things are on him, but when you're burning two timeouts, when there's clear like motions late and guys are jumping,
yep.
I don't know how much of that is the snap count or the way you're doing things. I just know that I don't see it very often, you know, and certainly not with veteran quarterbacks. But that's all supposed to happen. That's all part of the process. That's not really an issue. They cleaned that up. The only part of the first half that I was discouraged by really was the 4 sacks when I thought maybe one of those should have happened. And the fact that they didn't really get the passing game going other than on those RPO screen type things, that all changed in the second half when he threw for a 140 and went 12 of 16. And instead of looking to run, he looked to throw. And that like epiphany or change, whatever led to it, I hope we see a lot more of it. The Giants have a bad secondary. We had their reporters on all last week saying, hey, Washington should be able to take advantage of this. And you saw it with Noah Brown. I don't know why Terry McLaurin couldn't. In that same area of the field. I don't know why nobody else was getting open in the middle of the field, but Ertz certainly got free, caught 2 balls of 20-plus,
mm-hmm.
and then Brown with the long on the 34-yarder catch and run. That was a really nice seat of a throw. Good signs all the way around.
Agreed.
And I thought overall a winning, good performance by Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, I mean, it's a super hard balance, right? Roe is going to judge after the fact on how effective something was. Like if a scramble goes for 14 yards on a 3rd and 8, you go, that's good. Nice, we should do that. But could it have been a 40-yard touchdown? We don't know, right? It's always so hard, again, to work back kind of from the result. Or if he stays behind the line of scrimmage for too long and nobody breaks open and ends up being a sack, could you have just gotten the first down on a 3rd and 5? I mean, there's so much nuance to this position. And everything that you do, there's always something that could have been better or a throw that you missed or something, because it's so imperfect and it's so much harder maybe than it's ever been. But to me, I love what I saw, which was more about what looked like comfort. That's what I was trying to allude to initially when I talked about the panic in game one. Again, panic's the wrong word, but I don't have another one. Where it's like, when in doubt, I gotta go. This was, I don't have any doubt. Like, I'm not shook. I'm not upset. I'm not worried about all the different hits in the second half.
Yes.
Right? I got popped a few times in the first half.
The first half was a continuation of Tampa.
Yeah.
The second half was not at all. Favorite throw for him? I have 3 that I wrote down. A lot of people are calling out the Noah Brown play, which was a beautiful throw. But I thought that was actually a lower difficulty throw because he was wide open. I have 2 maybe not noticeable throws that I thought were awesome.
There was a slant to McLaurin where I went, there's a millimeter
yep.
in any direction. You can't fit it anywhere else, and that had to be there, and that was perfect.
That's one of them. It's a short throw, but it was terrific.
Yeah.
And he's so accurate. Jaden Daniels, his accuracy is awesome.
And there was one to Ertz where Ertz was being held. They declined the penalty because it was a catch for a first down. Where again, not a ton of space, but he put it on the, I guess it would have been on Ertz's, you know, good side shoulder where Ertz had to make a hands catch away from his body to keep it away from the defender to expose the holding.
A check down, like a 5-yard throw to Bates at one point, too,
mm-hmm.
to John Bates. The other one was on an out route to Terry McLaurin in the first drive of the second half. It just perfectly timed. It was McLaurin's longest catch of the day. It was like 12 yards. If you remember, he kind of broke out and the ball was hitting him as he got to the sideline, got a couple feet in, and they even tried to challenge, I think, if he had caught the ball or not.
Oh, the foot track. Yeah,
it was bang,
you're right.
Bang.
Yep.
But I thought that was a perfect throw as well. So there was a lot to like, I thought, after halftime especially, but just generally from him throwing the football in this game. And the other thing is, you know, we got to decide, like, how are we grading this, right? I think if you're grading this from the perspective of he's a rookie, which we should, then it's really encouraging.
Yep.
Because the other rookies, Caleb Williams, Chicago, Bo Nix, what we've seen from him in Denver, that's the list. There are 3 of them. They have done nothing like what Jaden Daniels has done to this point. So I think if you want to incorporate that context, I think it helps you to view it through an even better lens. It's been solid. You know, if you gave him a C last week, I think you got to give him at least a B this week. And I thought it was an A performance in the second half for me.
Agreed.
800-636-1067. You want to hop in on Jaden Daniels on G&D. Dan Quinn met with the media today. We've got the best of his press conference next on The Fan.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.